Okay, today we are striking at the root, exploring the heart of independent unity, which is what we are now. Those of you that don't know, we changed our name a couple of weeks or last December. The membership voted to do that and to also declare our independence from our national organization, because I would want to talk a little bit about that today, but not much. Just as to why, part of the reasoning behind that. But I like this photograph. It's a sunrise, and you see those of you watching on YouTube, you'll see this as the opening picture. But the beams of light kind of take your eye down to what you know behind the horizon is the sun. And that's kind of the idea I want to convey today. It's striking at the root. It's getting back to our source, back to a consciousness, a conscious awareness of our source, that that's what we are about. And so that's what we're going to deal with today. And I'm going to venture into an arena that I never do, and that's politics and social issues. And I'm not going to do it in a way that you need to get nervous about. I'm going to explain our position on why you don't hear political issues espoused from the pulpit or any other place, why we don't do that. It's obviously an important part of our life, but that's not our purpose here, and that's what we're going to be discussing today. So Charles Fillmore and Charles Myrtle Fillmore, when they started this unity movement, they didn't know what they were doing in terms of, they didn't consciously go out to start a movement. They started a magazine, basically, called Modern Thought. And in the beginning, they would include in this magazine everything you could imagine, from all different kinds of religion to political issues to letting people know about government subsidies and, you know, all this. They went through a lot of stuff. And as they evolved in their understanding of what the ministry or what their ministry would be about, they started dropping all of that, and for a good reason. So in his first publication, Modern Thought, Charles Fillmore pointed out that they would sympathize with reform movements of every kind, but it is not our province to become identified with them all, nor to give them a hearing in these columns. And what he's calling reform movements, you know, it's, we don't really call them reform movements now. They're just social issues, social justice, or whatever name we want to give it today. But it was just as alive then as it is now, the need to address these things, and especially from a spiritual point of view. And it would seem natural then that a church, especially one like this, would take a stand on issues and let all of you know what that stand is. And that's what a lot of churches do. They make that clear, and then everybody's supposed to kind of follow along. But that's not what we're about. And one of the greatest, the grandfather of all social activism, I think, was Henry David Thoreau. He was jailed a number of times for things like failing to pay his taxes or whatever. There was a story about he was put in jail one time, and Ralph Waldo Emerson, who was a good friend of his, and let him use the land where he built his little cabin and did the Walden's Pond thing. Emerson walks up to the jailhouse and said, "Henry, what are you doing in there?" And Thoreau looked back out through the bars and said, "Mr. Emerson, what are you doing out there?" You know, it was like, why aren't you involved in this issue? But as adamant as he became or was about many social issues of his day, he writes this very interesting thing. "There are 1,000 hacking at the branches of evil to one who is striking at the root. And it may be that he who bestows the largest amount of time and money on the needy is doing the most by his mode of life to produce that misery which he strives in vain to relieve." And so he's speaking from firsthand experience that sometimes the causes we jump on don't necessarily solve the problem, but maybe they are so emotionally charged that they draw us in that way. The core instruction of unity, our core approach to life, I think can be summarized in this statement from Emily Cady. She says, "Seek light from the Spirit of Truth within you. Go alone. Think alone. Seek light alone. And if it does not come at once, do not be discouraged and run off to someone else to get light. For as we said before, by so doing you get only the opinion of the intellect, and may be then further away from the truth you are seeking than ever before. For the mortal mind may make false reports." I have always considered the heart and soul of the Unity message this. If you want to know God, it's not about going to church. It's not about study. It's not about listening to ministers. It's not about picking up ideas from outside sources, though these may lend you support. But to go within yourself, to go alone, to think alone, to seek light alone, that's where I've had the most profound experiences I've had on this spiritual journey. I had gotten much inspiration from a Unity church I would attend in the early years in Kansas City, but I got the most when I began to go alone and meditate and open myself to that inner presence, and it began to unfold in me in a way where God stopped being a theory and became a reality. And a lot of people don't think you can experience God. They think of God as this big, old, great dynamic power in the sky or someplace that is too great for the average individual to experience. That it took special people like prophets and a Jesus, you know, the very Son of God, to, they're a special class of people that can have this firsthand experience with God. But I think if we look closely at what Jesus taught, that the things I do, you can do also in greater things, because I go to the Father. I go to the source. And if you'll go to your source, you can do the things I'm doing in greater things. He didn't put any restrictions on the average human being. And that was primarily his audience, was average people, workers, fishermen, farmers, and yes, there were the intellectuals and the doctors and the lawyers and all that too. Often there to poke holes in his message, you know, to say, well, you're not following tradition here. You're not following the rules. You're not doing what you're supposed to be doing according to our law. And he was pretty adamant about, that's not what we're here to do. We're not here to follow a religion. I've said before, I consider myself Christian, but not one who adopts mainline Christian theology. There's no place in my thought for that. What I do is I follow what I believe are the mystical teachings of Jesus. There's a mystical thread that runs through the Gospels, the teachings that have been preserved, the closest thing we have to him. But we keep in mind, these are not a gospel according to Jesus. Gospels according to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And the original gospels themselves were anonymous. We don't know who wrote them. They were only given their names later on, and that was done out of context or out of taking things, the context of the gospels themselves is how they were given the names. But we don't have a gospel according to Jesus. And so we have to look for it. And I've talked to people that say, I really like Eastern teachings because they're so straightforward about the spiritual awakening of the individual. And I agree with that. That Christianity, the writers probably were not aware of this approach. Jesus probably was. But they had to transmit the message, you know, the gospel according to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, not according to Jesus. It would be amazing if we would find something that Jesus produced. That would be a pretty cool thing. But it would be controversial, because I believe it would be quite different from what we see in the pomp and circumstance of mainline Christianity and all of the things that have popped up around what we think of Christianity. I consider myself an alternative Christian. You know, I feel very rooted in what I glean from the teachings of Jesus. I think he was a spiritual genius. And I think that the people that were taking his sayings and putting them into a narrative form, Mark was the first to do this, and his gospel came out around 65 AD, maybe 30 years after the death of Jesus, if you can kind of imagine that. That he was speaking on behalf of the church. He wanted to give a message that was developing from the Jesus movement and to put that into a concise form. And I would imagine that that was a very welcome thing to have happen in those early days, because people would pass on by word of mouth things they had heard that he said, or, you know, maybe somebody that knew him even, or somebody that knew him. But it was passed on orally for a long, the message was passed on orally for a long time. Then Mark comes along, or whoever wrote the Gospel of Mark, and took this list of sayings and put it in story form. And so you can imagine that when that came out, what a powerful message it would have contained. But is it the message of Mark, or is it the message of Jesus? That's the question we are faced with. And so there's all kinds of reasons that we need to understand that. And I'm going to talk more about that as we go along in the future, because it's so important. I drove by one of the mega churches this morning, and I've heard it said of them that they're a mile wide and an inch deep. And what that means is they are very attractive. You see crowds go to these things. But do they focus on the individual waking up to their personal relationship with God, or are they more interested in convincing you that you need to accept Jesus Christ as your personal Savior so when you die, you'll be saved? And that's a lot of the message. But it's also the mile-wide aspect is they provide, you know, great entertainment. They provide Krispy Kreme donuts and great coffee and, you know, all the things, all kinds of groups and support groups and all the stuff that that we like to get involved in. But what is the bottom line message? It is basically that you must accept this theological presentation of who Jesus was, what he represents, and the second coming and all of that to keep God happy. And I don't want to criticize that, because obviously the majority of people buy into that and they have a need for it. But I believe that when an individual really starts challenging this stuff, really starts digging into the Bible, how it was written, why it was written, how it was produced, who was involved in writing, and that just that entire process, that we begin to question that. And we find that there is a message running through the teachings of Jesus that is very directed to the soul, to us, to individuals. And as I said last week, and will continue to say, the best representation to me of the gospel of Jesus is found in the parable of the prodigal son. He goes off, messes up totally, comes home, is welcome with open arms, no questions asked. And that's the nature. When you experience God in your own being, you realize that though I have gone off in my thinking way off into some far country, that presence never has left me. It is there. It will rise up into my awareness. No strings attached, no conditions, totally unconditional. And no matter what I have done or how wrong I have thought, how far down that path of sin or whatever you want to call it that I have gone, because the prodigal son went down a pretty far path of sin according to the story. And as I said, that's where I think Jesus, he made him, you know, out to be about one of the worst characters you could imagine. Ended up eating the food that he was feeding swine. And for a Jewish boy, that would be the very bottom of the barrel. because the Jews do not partake of swine or anything that has to do with them. So all he's doing is saying, no matter how bad you are, no matter how far you go into this far country, you're okay. And just open your mind to this inner presence. Go within that inner closet. Shut the door and pray to the Father who's in secret. Find the Lord your God. Love the Lord your God, not the Lord somebody else's God. Not some prescription a church puts out, but your own. So there is an activity going on, and I think it is because the message I'm talking about right now is one of the most difficult for you as an individual to find your own experience with God. It is so easy to follow the crowd, to follow a teaching, to say, Reverend, what do I believe? What do we believe here? What do you want me to believe? Rather than find for yourself what is true. And so there are a lot of churches within the Unity Movement that are adopting spiritual social action, is what they're calling it. And all it is social action justified with the spiritual connotation. And it drops down into the level of politics. And that's what I want to make clear that we don't do. Many leaders of Unity have taken a definitive turn towards social activism. Our ministry's sole purpose is to provide the teachings and environment that encourage the spiritual awakening of the individual. So if I'm up here talking about some social cause, just say homelessness. You know, we have a homeless shelter going up behind us. We sold these people the land. We're not saying that we endorse that. There are people in the church that do endorse that approach, but we just sold the land. It's not a statement of support that now we're going to be one with them and that cause handle the homeless issue from the perspective they're going to. That would divide this church, and that's not what we're about. But do we close our eyes to that? No, we don't. And Unity, the Unity I grew up in, never said close your eyes to it. It's just that we, as an institution, don't make statements pro or against a cause. That's up to you. Our job is to help you get in touch with your core, your source. That's our sole mandate. It's not to tell you how to vote. It's not to tell you how to think about some situation. I've said before, too, that Unity has never told people what to think. It will tell people how to think. And you say, well, what's the difference? How do you think about God? Well, we don't think of God as an old man in the sky. We think of God as an inner presence. Like a sponge immersed in the ocean, the ocean's in that sponge and the sponge is in the ocean. The Father's in me, I'm in the Father, but the Father's greater. Here's how to think of God. It's not what to think about God, because the religion I grew up in told you what to think about God, not how to think. But you think of God as this energy in which you live and move and have your being. You know, Paul said it very beautifully. It's a different way to think about God. Well, what does that mean? How do I apply that to my life? You know, that's where my choices come in. Now I'm not thinking of God as this old man up in the sky. I'm thinking of God as a presence I cannot escape, that's always with me. All that God is with me all the time. What does that mean? Why am I suffering? Why am I having this problem? How can I incorporate that understanding into this situation? That's how to think, not what to think. If I say we support homelessness, so, you know, we support the drive to get rid of it, I'm telling you what to think, then you have to be on my team. You see, you have to be on my thing. That's not what we do. You can deal with that issue in any way you want. And when you find your own God, your own center of power, you make your own decision from that basis. Unity steps out from that point of view, or from that at that stage. Our ministry's sole purpose is to provide the teachings and environment that encourage the spiritual awakening of the individual. That's it. And that seems maybe like it's not so strong, but to me it is the most powerful thing in the world. When I decided to enter ministry, I asked myself, I made this conscious question, what is the greatest thing I could contribute to society? It wasn't become a politician. It wasn't to become a social worker. There's places for both of those. It was to teach people that God, the source of your being, is within you, that all that you need is within you. And as you touch that center of power, as you go to that place, then you enter your life from a higher perspective. You make decisions. Maybe you get on whatever bandwagon, political bandwagon you're interested in. That's fine. But we don't dictate that. We will never dictate that from here. But we do not act as if that's just something we don't, you know, that doesn't exist, because it does exist. And it's part of our experience. Jesus advised rendering unto Caesar what is Caesar's and unto God what is God's. He didn't make it an either-or proposition. He does make a clear distinction between social responsibilities and spiritual interests. His ministry was based on spiritual interests. But when somebody said, do we pay taxes? That's when he said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. He didn't say, no, you're above that. That's against all spiritual law. Let's have a tax rebellion, like Henry David Thoreau may have said. He said, he didn't make a judgment on it. He just said, there are things that you give to God and things you give to Caesar, or political, social, whatever. And he made that distinction for a very important reason. Because if you, as an individual, are off base, off your spiritual base, you're not as powerful. And you will feel powerless, and you will seek groups to gain your power. That's why people join movements, because by myself, I'm not much. But if I get with this group, I'm somebody. You know, I'm part of that. And so you're actually drawing your power not from God, not from your inner source, but from that group. Now, what if that group was made up of individuals who were drawing their power from within? It'd be pretty powerful. And it's an important distinction. I have seen this so often in the Unity Movement. I saw this transition take place, and I pulled myself out of it several years ago because I saw that this was occurring. It was becoming more about the collective than it was about the individual. And the unity I discovered was all about the individual's spiritual awakening. When you join a collective, they look at you, they value you. Your value is based not on you as an individual, but on what you can contribute to the collective. And if you can't contribute much, then you're not worth much. But if you are a strong, awakened spiritual individual, then you will contribute a great deal to whatever you get involved in. And that's the whole point. Seek first the kingdom of God, as Jesus said, and all these things will be added. All these things he's not saying are, you know, he's not dismissing that as part of our life. It's a very important part. Social issues become, and just think about this, because this is where politics comes in. Social issues become politically charged because they center around the underlying question of how government should be used. We don't ignore that question. But the question comes down basically to, should government be used to give a man a fish, or should it encourage him to learn to fish? If you look at the political landscape, that's kind of the two questions that people represent. We either want government to provide everything for everybody, or we want government to help people learn how to provide for themselves. And there's this big battle going on. Well, Independent Unity will never say, here's what you should think about it. It leaves it up to you. And in fact, the way government is used, there's times when government does provide things, like a hurricane goes through or something. You know, people need help. They're just totally devastated. So government steps in and helps. But it's important, too, that people learn to help themselves. So which side do we stand on? Well, that's your business. You know, that's your business, which side you stand on and how you want to use government. And we never raise that question here. The whole spiritual development has nothing to do with that question. It doesn't deal with it. And there are a lot of people that say that's not correct, that it does deal with it. How can you not deal with it? When you're going in to be still and seek your connection with the infinite, part of the process of doing that is letting go of everything, letting go of the concerns that are raging outside. And when you find your center of power, then you go into your life and you make choices, you make decisions, you do the things that you're led to do. But this church will not dictate that. It's not intended to dictate and will never do that. The principles involved in the spiritual awakening do not pertain to how the fish is acquired, whether it's given or we catch it ourselves. Coming to know oneself at the soul level, that is, finding one's spiritual center of power, involves spending time alone in quiet, letting go of all these external distractions. So I know I have colleagues that get up in their pulpits and they espouse causes. And that's always bothered me, because I think, okay, who's doing the spiritual thing? If you're going to be doing the political thing, who's going to do the spiritual thing? Which is what I thought unity was all about. And what I think it is more people, like driving by the big mega church this morning, it's got hundreds, thousands of people there. It's the herd follows that. The crowd follows that. And so if we start waning, if we're a mile deep and an inch wide and we want to become wider, then we start asking, well, how can I bring more people in? How can we appeal to more people? And so we get off on the low-hanging fruit of political issues. And we try to draw people based on something other than what we are designed to do. So who does this now? What happens to the spiritual teaching that deals only with the spiritual awakening? I would equate that to saying something like the 12-step program started getting off on political issues rather than how to achieve sobriety. You know, it's the same thing. It'd be, who's going to do the sobriety thing? You know, who's going to help individuals get off of their addiction and on to a life of soul recovery? So that's our sole job here. That's our sole purpose here. It's not to convince you of something so you'll go out and vote or go out and, you know, jump on some bandwagon. And there are many out there, and there are many worthy ones. I'm not, you know, putting that down at all. I'm just saying this is what we are. This is our purpose. Because if that purpose goes away, who's going to do it? Who's going to focus on the spiritual awakening of the individual, which I believe is the most powerful thing we can possibly do? And I have always recognized that it is a minority approach. We will never have a huge following, because people are so interested in, you know, what am I supposed to think? If you just watch the marquee of this Faith Heights Church, which is beautiful, the whole thing is very beautiful, but just the messages that scroll through, you know, it's all about theology. It's all about come to this community and you'll be one of us. And I don't know how to describe that exactly, but it attracts a lot of people. There's all kinds of bells and whistles that people get when they go there that have nothing to do with the inner awakening. We will always just focus on the inner awakening and all of the things around that. How do you pray from this point of view? How do you meditate? How do you look at the Bible? How do you look at yourself? How do you look at God? How do you look at your relationship to God? That's what we're about, is answering those kinds of questions. And I love discussing that on anything like that, on a one-on-one basis. This is not the only way I do ministry. So if you want to make an appointment, give me a call and we'll chat about it. A ministry focused on the spiritual awakening of the individual is not denying the social aspects or political concerns of the human experience. It is, in fact, representing the highest possible solution to social ills. And see, in this group here, we have people on both sides of the political aisle, and I'm very proud of that, because we're not trying to solve social or political issues. We are all drawn together by something we can agree on. I want to know more about God and how to experience God. I want to know more about who and what I am as a spiritual being. I want to know how that translates into success in my life. I want to know how this spiritual thing can make sense. The spiritual logic I grew up with had very little to do with just normal life. And when I discovered unity, it was like a window opened. Suddenly there was something that was spiritually logical. And that was a pretty profound thing. But the core of that rests on the spiritual awakening of the individual. And that will always be our mission here, to focus on that. That is our purpose, our stated purpose. All right? So next week I will continue on. I would like to talk a little bit more about Jesus and how the whole message of his, why we can break away from tradition and think for ourselves. I think he encouraged that. And that whole religious thing keeps a lot of people in a box. And we want to break out of that. All right. Well, thanks for coming out, and hope we can see you next week.